It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back into The Drive as we continue on this Victory Monday. This Mad Dog Monday, this...
Sports Radio 610, Houston Texans breaking news.
This breaking news Monday, apparently. All right, Tyler has some breaking news. What is the latest?
Yeah, it's not good news regarding the Houston Texans. Diana Russini, she reports the Texans defensive end Mario Edwards is going to miss the next four games. He has been suspended by the league, per source.
Yeah, I'm seeing that right
now.
Substance
abuse.
Yep, that's what it says here. Ian Rappaport, along with you said you got Diana. Ian Rappaport reports Mario Edwards Jr. of the Houston Texans is suspended four games without pay for violating the NFL's substance abuse policy. It is announced today. Edwards will be eligible for reinstatement on November 11th following the Texans' Week 10 game against the Detroit Lions. So what is that, fellas, is... Mario Edwards Jr. leaves, who was having a really good, productive first six games, is at the same timing that DeNico Autry returns. So he is eligible to return, and we heard earlier today on In the Loop when Coach Ryan spoke, he talked about the return of DeNico Autry and how he will fit in, but he will have to address this here with Mario Edwards Jr. How big of a deal is this? Because you were one who's been very, very high since training camp on Mario Edwards Jr., and he was playing really well, as we just mentioned, as a big fella inside there.
Well, you just, I mean, you talk about a guy stepping up at a position when he was needed the most. I mean, DeNico Autry, he started stepping up, and maybe the Texans knew about it and we didn't, but he starts stepping up, starts showing out in training camp. When even with DeNico Autry, I believe that the Texans needed a little bit of help interior wise, and he was the guy that was showing up and showing out. And then DeNico Autry obviously gets popped before the year starts, and you need him even more, right? And so him stepping up and showing up and showing out was even more important, even more significant for all us Texans fans out there. And he's been a really, really nice surprise. I mean, I think folks expected Foley to come in and play well, Tim Settle to come in and play well. I only speak for myself. I've been aware of Mario Edwards Jr. for a long time. I thought he was just a depth player that would possibly get some mop up duty kind of work. And I mean, hell, he's come in and been one of the better, if not the best interior defensive lineman, at least from being consistent and showing up every game.
I mean, he's probably got as many sacks as Neil Hunter has.
Well, I know he's got a couple.
Yeah, he's got two or three. I think Daniel has two.
Yeah, he's been a pleasant surprise. And so you would like for him to be in the fold when DeNico Autry comes back. Obviously, you would like to just add there instead of add one and subtract the other. But, I mean, it looks like there's something illegal going on, and he got popped, and part of the business, man. Just thank the good Lord that DeNico Autry's coming back. We'll see if he can. He should be able to more than fill Mario Edwards' shoes.
I was going to say, how big of it is this a big deal to you?
I mean, yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, four games. Who do we got in that four-game stretch?
You got Green Bay.
Gonna be that's a hell of a deal. That's a
Green Bay, good Colts, spot. Jets, and Lions.
Yeah, I mean, you got a couple squads in there that are gonna try to run the football downhill. And like I've said before, I think the Colts are mad at themselves in game one against the Texans for the play calling. Straying away from just running the ball downhill with their 1-2 punch. I think I saw where Anthony Richardson is going to play this week against the Dolphins. They've already announced it, I believe.
Yep.
So I would imagine he's going to be back against the Texans as well, assuming he can stay healthy. And so, yeah, I mean, that interior run, that interior defensive line is still a point of, you know, it's – I wonder if that's why D'Amico's having to pressure so much. I wonder if that's why he's having to dedicate more heads to the line of scrimmage is not just to pressure young quarterbacks, but also to stop the run. You got to wonder those kind of things. And so, it's a big deal. Mario Edwards has been the best interior defensive lineman we've had.
Yeah. All right. Again, if you're just jumping in and joining us, multiple reports, this from Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, Mario Edwards Jr. of the Houston Texans is suspended 4 games without pay for violating the NFL's substance of abuse policy. It was announced today. Edwards will be eligible for reinstatement on November 11th following the Texans' Week 10 game against the Detroit Lions. So he'll be eligible for the game against the Cowboys in Dallas. So that's when Mario Edwards Jr. Will be available to return. So that is the latest news as Tyler broke through. That is not good news here for the Texans. All right, Clint. I know it was a dominating performance, and it was. They did what they needed to do. You put up 41-21. You win by 20 points. That game was never in doubt to me. And they put it on the Patriots like they should. But I know for you, when you watched it, there was some concerns after seeing what Drake May was able to do in moments and in spots against the Texans' defense.
No, I'm not concerned at all about what I saw. I think now Drake May. There's a conversation there to be had. I mean, he exceeded my expectations. I thought he played significantly better than what he was going to play, given the circumstances that he was put in. But yeah, threw for, I think, over 100 yards more than the average that Jacoby Brissett was getting on a weekly basis the previous 5 weeks. He had a couple of big time throws for explosive plays, right? But the way I look at it is one, I don't think D'Amico Ryans is going to be that reckless against better quarterbacks. D'Amico Ryans was all out pressure. Just show the kid that you're going to be in man to man coverage. And just he knew where he was going to throw the football before he ever snapped the football a good chunk of the time. And they somehow blocked it up a couple of times and he hit big plays. I mean, it's as easy as you can get from a quarterback's perspective when it comes to processing and playing the game mentally. Now, physically, different animal. What Drake May did was he showed me he's tougher than nails. He can stand in there, he's going to get the hell beat out of him, and he'll stand in there and make throws in the third and fourth quarter that, if the game were close, could be difference makers. But D'Amico Ryans gave him a very simple, a very clear picture. Way too often. I understand why he did it. I'm not criticizing D'Amico. I'm just saying from a quarterback's perspective, it was very clear where he was going to go with the football, and he made those throws under pressure. He made the throws that ended up being big plays under pressure. There's no way in hell D'Amico Ryans does that moving forward against the quarterbacks.
Like, you don't think he does it next week against Jordan Love?
No. If he does, Jordan Love will torch us, and it will be an old-fashioned shootout between him and C.J. Stroud, and I don't know that I'm ready for that with no Nico Collins. So, yeah, no, I think you're going to get it against a quarterback like Love, a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, a quarterback like Lamar, a quarterback like Pat Mahomes, Jared Goff, all these guys, Dak Prescott. No, you're not going to line up out there in just flat-ass man coverage and dare him to stand out.
He has been aggressive, though. Like, they have blitzed. Well, more than D'Amico ever has when he was in San Francisco.
There is a huge conversation to have, and I'm sure it's not necessarily on a Reaction Monday, but there's a huge conversation to be had there, Ron, and we'll definitely get to it this week, but about what this defense does moving forward and why it is they're doing what they're doing. I know why you did it on Sunday.
Yeah.
Right, because I mean, Caleb's guys somehow didn't protect it. And Caleb couldn't connect anything down the field. Somehow this strung together offensive line, Ron, they started a center. They started a center that they picked up off of somebody else's practice squad on Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, they had six or seven different
offensive lines. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that they I didn't think that they would protect him well enough for him to even get a couple of balls off. But when you show him, hey, this is what we're going to do, we're going to play man across the board. He's got Butte out here on Derek Stingley. Even though it is Stingley, hey, I'm going to take that snap. I'm going to get it up in the air. I'm not going to sit back here and get hit. And then, you know, you all out blitz, and you got your slot receiver over the middle. Everybody in the middle of the field vacates. You got a lesser defender on your slot receiver. You bang the ball over the middle for a big play. I mean, those are, you know, like very, very simple plays to process. And what Drake May did was prove he can physically handle the pressure and he can physically make some throws. I think it's going to be a different animal moving forward for Drake when he faces a defense that can pressure you with four and is doing some different things coverage-wise, and now you got to stand in there and get through progressions and process it all. I think that's where Drake's going to struggle. But back to the original question, I'm not worried about the Texans' defense whatsoever based on what I saw this past Sunday. I don't think that D'Amico Ryans will be as reckless with that man-to-man, calling it and showing it the way they did. I don't think he'll do that against better quarterbacks.
I hope not. The only thing is just that slot receiver situation. That was the one. I think maybe that's to your point. Maybe he just won't leave people on islands like that. But throughout the year, Eric Murray and Jalen Petrie have been in coverage in the slot. And that wasn't the best slots in the league, and that wasn't the best quarterbacks in the league. And they were able to get big plays off of that. Now, the booty play was, you know, just a fade go route. Yep. I saw you tweet that out. He's been doing that since he first started playing quarterback and throwing the ball. That's an easy deal. But they were getting big chunk plays with getting Murray, getting Petrie locked up in the slot.
Right.
I think that's what they're going to do. And that is the only thing from the game and from the season, to be honest with you, that teams haven't taken advantage of as much that we've seen. We've been able to see Petrie and Murray kind of play, especially Petrie on their terms of where D'Amico wants them to play. A couple of times they got caught for big plays, and that would be the only thing for me is that going to be something that is a continuous?
Well, to be fair, there were, beyond that go route, there were two drives that Drake May was exceptional on in terms of just getting the football out, knowing where to go with the football, getting it out. Again, now I think it was a very vanilla look, man-to-man look. D'Amico made it easy for him, and the young fella passed the test. But really good drives. Again, exceeded my expectations in a big way. Ron, I'm with you. Here's the difference in a Drake May, and I'll just use Aaron Rodgers because I think he's the next veteran on the schedule, right? Is that, I would say, like
veteran after, like it, their next ones are Love. And then,
Love's plenty capable. I'll go with Love. Like, the difference in Drake May. Like, Drake May has the ability, we know now, to catch the football. If you show him man-to-man coverage, catch the football, stand in there, and deliver the football and hope that the rush doesn't get there quick enough, right? The guys that you're going to play moving forward, they're going to adjust the protection to where they can pick up the most dangerous rushers. They're going to drift away from the free rusher long enough to where now they're driving the football down the field consistently. Like Drake, it was a roll of the dice. Can he get it off, or is it a sack fumble? I thought he was going to get knocked out. I mean, he damn near did a couple of times. I told the guys in the lounge we were watching. I said, this kid's going to get cracked. I mean, it's going to be over. It's too much risk. The better quarterbacks are so comfortable, and the better offenses where the quarterback has more control, they're so comfortable at adjusting it, knowing, hey, my most dangerous man route is over here to my right. Let me protect my right edge really hard, make the far left defender the guy that's free in this pass protection, and I'll drift to the right, if not roll right, and I'll get this ball out for a monster play, and I'm going to do it in my sleep. You know, that's where your veteran quarterbacks take the ball completely out of your hands. They just take the advantage completely out of the defense's hand. Is now they're just in their sleep getting huge chunk plays.
So we'll see about that. I'm with you. They were he was just saying to hell with it, cut it loose
the whole game. I thought he, once they got three score lead, Ron, I thought, hey, he'll call the dogs off, he'll back up a little bit. He just kept doing it. Yeah. He just said, hell, we're just going to keep doing it. Now,
that's what we game plan.
You know, the question, again, that we need to discuss moving forward this week, Ron, is this secondary good enough to be doing that?
Yeah, not especially to this extent with the quarterbacks that they're going to face.
Yeah, I mean, at some points it's reckless. At some point it becomes reckless.
But
hope the pressure gets there.
He has pressured and blitzed more than we've seen the first 6 weeks. We were accustomed from seeing him here even last year and with San Francisco, but it hadn't been like it was yesterday. Like, yesterday it was like, we're gonna heat his ass up. That's what we're gonna do. we're gonna heat his ass up, and that's where it is. All right, so hey, big performance by them. Gave up some plays, but obviously, I think some of that heating up probably helped go towards the four turnovers they had in that game. All right, we do it every Monday. C.J. Stroud, how would you grade C.J. Stroud's performance yesterday against the Patriots? 20 of 31, 192 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. How do you grade C.J. Stroud's performance yesterday? We'll discuss that coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
That makes me think of the Mets. By the way, Francisco Lindor just hit a leadoff home run in the National League Championship Series. They lead 1-0 in L.A. So, there you go. I like to hear that.
It's a banger.
Thanks. All right. 713-572-4610. Those of you out there, you can join in on the conversation as we do every week. Those of you on YouTube and Twitch, I see you all having a good old time out there. And join in on this as well. What was C.J. Stroud's grade for yesterday's game? C.J. Stroud, as Clint said off the top, yeah, he didn't have to throw on a cape and have to go out here and be A+, you know, the absolute reason, number one reason, which he has been many times over the last year plus, in games that the Texans have won.
You know the answer to that.
Or hell, even in games that they lost. By the way, I heard my man, he was ready to get home last night, wasn't he?
Yeah, I thought he maybe didn't like me talking about Dalton Schultz the way I did or something. I thought he was mad at us. He said, "No, man, I'm just trying to get home, man."
I heard you say, man.
Trying to get home, man.
You're in a rough mood, man. So we did.
To hell, man. We got about 4 questions in, and my man was like just, I mean, it was like talking to a girl in a bar that ain't very interested. They got better options.
God, I want to dive into that. But 713-572-4610. Those of you on YouTube and Twitch, your thoughts on this grade. 20 for 31, Clint, 192, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, and Davis Mills came in to relieve him when this thing was over. How would you grade his performance?
I'm going to go with a B plus because I do think there's some good in managing the game. I thought he was absolutely tremendous early on in the game, getting that 14-0 lead. I thought he was really good throughout, which is what CJ does. When you throw a pick in the end zone, just generally speaking, I got to dock you for it, right? So let's reverse this thing, okay? So it was a game where he was more of a manager, but he did some CJ type stuff. The stats weren't through the roof, so I'm gonna start him at an A is where I'm at, right? I was in an A, and I'm watching the game, and you get a red zone interception, points come off the board. That's a negative,
how,
right?
How much was that particular play, in your opinion, on him?
100%. That's a negative, right? And then I look at just through the quarterback lens of how it happened. The whole, we talk about it all the time, and it used to be an absolute no-no in the NFL, and like people would literally get pissed off about it. Now, because of the Pat Mahomes of the world, everybody, it's okay now. As the old quarterback, I still look at it. Yeah, it's acceptable, cool, because you've made a ton of plays doing that. But this is a perfect example of if you make it a habit to drift to your right and throw the football back across the middle late, that backside defender, whether it's a linebacker or a safety or a corner, they're going to bite you in the ass. It's going to bite you in the ass when it matters the most. And now this obviously didn't matter the most because you were rocking and rolling. The team picked up for you. But he got double docked right there for me. The red zone... First thing you cannot do when you get in field goal range is throw picks.
Two people back-to-back, Dalton's got to catch that.
I disagree. On the TV copy, I'm going to go back and watch it on all 22. The ball was launched from a whole different angle than Dalton thought it was expected it was going to be from.
I thought a lot of hands got in there.
It was the back shoulder, and I'm pretty sure a defensive back's hand got in there. Now, I'll backpedal and tell you that I'm dead wrong. You know I ain't got no problem getting on Dalton's ass now. But I think that was a poor decision. It was a poorly placed football. It was thrown into traffic, and it was thrown back across the middle of the field late. I think more times than not, that's going to bite you in the ass against good football teams. And so I had to double dock him there. So he went from an A to a B plus. He went from an A to a B plus for me, Ron.
Yeah. I'm in an A range, and I'm with you. I think he did exactly what he needed to do, especially in the second half. I think he knew exactly where this sucker was headed. And you could tell in the second half it was – because to me, I felt this way. I didn't think the Patriots had a chance in hell. And the only way that I think it was even going to be a game is if you helped them.
Yeah.
In the second half, and he refused to do it. And they didn't do it, and Bobby didn't. They didn't put themselves in that situation. But he did take a chance there. I don't, and I was just smiling when you were saying it's acceptable. Yeah, because I don't mind. I don't mind. You're going to take a couple of chances. I do that. I disagree with the 7 or 9 straight text messages that I just saw come through and say, how is that on CJ? That interception, the latest one, how is that interception on CJ's fault? The receiver didn't catch the ball.
Well, I tell you what.
And it ricocheted off.
Look, I tell you what. At Clint Sterner, give me a little follow on Instagram and on Twitter. At Clint Sterner on both of them. And here's what I'll do. I'll when that all 22 drops, I'll post a video. And if it were on Dalton, we'll all see it. I'll show you. There's a view from the back. It's either the back or the front. I don't know exactly what end zone that film was shooting from in New England. But it's either from directly in the back or directly in the front. We'll I'm 99.9% sure we will get an absolutely beautiful view of it. And I'll tell you who it's on.
Like, listen, I'll tell you. I told you before the year. I love it because he's going to take chances to try to make plays. And yes, you shouldn't fire that ball that is becoming double coverage because the safety started moving right over there. That's why he was there to catch the ricochet right there. And you should probably, you're under pressure. You don't have your feet set. You're throwing it like throwing it back into the middle of the field back into the middle of the field in harm's way like that to Dalton Schultz.
Well,
putting yourself in a situation. You're giving yourself the possibility of having what happen.
Well, the double whammy, Ron, is that the receiver also is running at an angle away from you.
Yes.
Not just right to left, but also deep to short. And it's one of those throws where it's like, unless the DB just doesn't ever look, you know, or put his hands up.
Foot.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, so it was.
But that was the only error to me that he had.
Yeah,
I agree. The rest of the way, playing the way he did without Nico Collins.
Tremendous.
And getting everybody involved, using the running backs, using Mixon. And 3 touchdowns and that 1 pick. And like I said, in the second half, sometimes, like to me, first half, you want to take some chances. He wanted to drive the stake through their hearts to make it 21-0. I'm into it. But in the second half, which I give him big points, was this is the Tom Brady type of thing. I think what Joe Burrow does, I think what Patrick Mahomes has started to develop is I'm going to do what I need to do.
Let me just manage this thing.
I'm going to do what I need to do to win. And he just said, the only thing that is going to get us in trouble is if I throw some sort of pick 6 or something. If I throw something that helps them to be able to score, and he didn't come close to doing that.
Yeah.
So I give him an A because, to me, in the first half, I kind of get turned on to the, hey, man, let's go ahead and shut this thing. I want to get Davis in this game in the third. Let's make this thing 21-0. So, but I understand where you're coming from. I disagree. I think you put that ball where you put it and you make that decision to throw it, you're putting it in harm's way to get picked off. And it's just going to happen sometimes. I don't want him to stop taking chances. I don't. I think we've seen that he is effective doing it. All right, coming up, it was another electric Saturday. A couple of questions with college football. This is hard for Tyler. Is Texas clearly the best team in football? I know we'll learn a lot coming up on Saturday, but right now they're clearly the best team. And what the hell is going on with Alabama? They're in here struggling with South Carolina at home after losing to Vanderbilt. We'll discuss that coming up.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, Saturday was a big – these college football games have been something else. Will Howard lost his everlasting mind with a timeout, just running aimlessly, and then just ran the clock out as Ohio State lost to Oregon. But that was 2-3, and that was a big game, and it was a fun watch. Fellas, I know this is tough for Tyler. Those of you can jump in as well, 713-572-4610, those on YouTube and Twitch. Is it clear right now? Like, is it separation that you think Texas is the number one team in the country?
Longhorn Nation, we're back!
Yeah, man, you ain't even got to play that no more, man. They showed enough back. But, I mean, is it? Hey, I'm just saying, they made the college football playoff last year when it was four, and they sit number one here. Is there a definite distance for you between them and the rest of the field? They've got blowout victories over their best opponents, went on the road and beat the brakes off Michigan, and then at neutral site, obviously at the Cotton Bowl, beat the hell out of Oklahoma 34-3, and Quinn was back starting for this team. They've had two different quarterbacks. They haven't really had any close games. Now, they got Georgia coming up on Saturday, so that'll be a big one. But is it clear to you that they have separated themselves from everybody else?
No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think. I think they are the number one team in the country. They deserve to be the number one team in the country. But as we look at it right now, Michigan is on the verge of falling outside of the top 25, the coaches poll or the AP top 25. They're on the verge of it. Oklahoma, I don't know what in the hell they're doing. They're not in the top 25, but I don't even know what they're doing. No disrespect to the young kid they're starting at quarterback, but you got a five-star quarterback on the bench that can spin it around the park. Obviously, it's been a little bit of a rough stretch. He's obviously on the bench for a reason, not playing well. Maybe he's not a leader. I don't know all the details about the kid, but you can't tell me if you're Oklahoma, that's the best foot you put out there every Saturday. I don't. I mean, that offense was absolutely awful, what they were rolling out there. So I just know that Texas has been as battle-tested as we think they are as this season kind of unfolds.
You think Saturday is when you'll find out?
I haven't even looked at this week's schedule.
They play Georgia.
That will be their toughest matchup. Georgia's sitting at 4 in the coaches' poll and 5 in the AP top 25. Yes, that will be a hell of a matchup. That's a complete football team that's got a quarterback that has an identity, that's coached really well, that's obviously a powerhouse over the last several years. So, Texas will have a shot to prove it. I'm going to tell you, Quinn Ewers came in there, Ron. I was thinking about you. Them first two drives, I mean, my man misses a touchdown. I mean, a surefire touchdown. And a third and, I think it was third and long conversion on a dig route that he sailed over the head, and the damn Oklahoma Sooner DB caught it for interception on the first drive. I mean, the first two drives, my man missed a huge chunk play on a conversion that would have swung field position and missed a damn touchdown that would have changed the game. And I'm thinking, damn, I mean, is there something about this Quinn Ewers? Is he not going to get, you know, was the Michigan game earlier in the year, was that a fluke? Or are we going to see, Arch Manning, what's going on? But he ended up, I guess, I didn't watch the entire game, but I guess he straightened it out. They ran the football well. They played good defense. Like I said, OU's offense just really was never much of a threat to Texas. So, but I do. I think Texas is without a doubt the number one team in the country. I love Oregon and what Dan Lanning is doing up in Oregon. Dylan Gabriel, another solid quarterback. Coincidentally, he's when it left OU and went to Oregon. I love what they're doing there.
It's just for me, Texas is the only team like that would even be in the conversation, Clint, that just is – they've appeared to overwhelm and dominate all of their
opponents. Agreed. That's right? Fair.
You know
that's
what I mean?
Very fair.
And that includes the athletes at Michigan, and that includes the kids at Oklahoma and the rest of what they've done.
You can argue, Ron, that they had to replace more than anybody based on what they lost in the draft.
Their defense looks better. And Oregon, who's the number two team in the country, they're 6-0. They just beat Ohio State. But they've had some fights with, I know Boise's pretty good, but good God, man, that thing was tight. They've had some tight games.
Georgia's had tight games.
Georgia's lost and has had tight games. We'll get to Alabama here in a bit. Ohio State, they looked that was funky. I would have said maybe Ohio State had they won that game in Eugene, but you know, I don't know. Just Texas has overwhelmed everybody they've played. Don't matter who the quarterback is. Quinn can be off what 3-4 weeks and still come back and eventually get it going where they win 34-3, and it ain't even. I mean, he had a waltz in touchdown walk in the fourth quarter. So in Miami, they're 6-0, but they have. I mean, they almost lost to Cal. They've had to pull victories out of the fire here a couple of times.
Well, the beautiful thing in college football right now, I know a lot of people don't like this. I love it. Right, is that you're not flirting with disaster until you get to two losses. Right. I mean, you got all these teams sitting at 5-1: Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, LSU, Clemson. Who would have thunk after week one? Right. Tennessee sitting at 5-1, Notre Dame sitting at 5-1. You got a lot of 5-1 football teams right now that still have a shot to get into college football playoffs. You've got a couple of 2-loss teams right now. Ole Miss still sitting at 15. They've got their 2 losses. They still have a shot to get into the college football playoffs if they win out, if they continue to, or if they turn that thing around and start playing well. I don't think they will, but you still have the 2-loss mark is where you go, all right, now we're up against it, boys. Now, we mess around and screw up again, we are out for sure. I love that about college football, is that there's a little bit of wiggle room and there's more teams involved in that 12-player playoff. And obviously, the number 12 is more than 4. I understand that. But I'm talking about as the season rolls along, you got half of the top 25 week in, week out is playing for a damn championship.
We'll see. I think at this moment, Texas has separated themselves from everybody else in the country. We'll see what happens as they host Georgia coming up on Saturday. Mm-hmm. If they can continue to look that way, because I'm telling you, if the Georgia that came out there to play against Kentucky that they damn near lost to 13-12,
yes,
that Georgia waltzes out there, they're gonna get their asses kicked. If the Georgia that had that was in a much closer game with Mississippi State than they should have been this weekend, beating them just by 10 at home. Like that, like they come and play like that, they're going to get beat down. Now, I would imagine that Smart probably has them in a better place than that, because Kirby will have them ready for this game. But this will be
one to watch. Kirby was pushing the opposing quarterback on the sideline and stuff.
So we'll see. By the way, another team that we're looking at is Alabama. Hey, man, what's up with Alabama?
Nick Saban's gone.
Hey, man, they're trailing 19-14 to South Carolina.
Yeah, it's weird to see stuff like that right now.
Did you see that? Did you watch
that game? It's at home. I watched a lot of it.
Bro, that was
the end of the half was ridiculous.
At the end of the game, South Carolina goes down there, scores, goes for two, and doesn't get it. That would have tied the ball game.
Yep.
And then they onside kick and get the onside kick. Bro, they got the ball. They had the ball on the verge of field goal range.
Somebody just threw a ball.
He just threw it up. And the thing was, on first down, they had time. If you hadn't watched that South Carolina quarterback, by the way, that kid's legit. He is fun to watch, man. I don't know what year he is right now.
He lost his mind.
No, he did. At the end of that ball game, I mean, you get a 10-yard completion, and you got at least a field goal. I don't know what the timeout situation was, but you got a field goal shot to win that football game, man. But that kid's fun to watch, man.
It's 11 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Alabama's down at home, 19-14. You think coming off the Vanderbilt game, all right, here we go. I mean, South Carolina's about to just take this one and like it, but no.
Mm.
No, it was like to the point Tyler said, kind of joking, but Nick Saban is out of here.
Yeah.
And they're like, I think Kalen's a good coach, obviously what he did at Washington, what he's done before, but something is off.
Well, it's like early in the season, I think the biggest watch in college football was Kalen DeBoer, Nick Saban, and does Jalen Milroe fit Kalen DeBoer's offense? And they start out hot and it gets quiet. And you're like, well, I guess that's answered. And then you watch a couple more weeks. And you're like, well, maybe not. Maybe we need to watch more. Maybe it is a little bit more of a. It's a little bit more difficult of a change at the head coach job, at the head coach position at Alabama than we thought. So the bad thing about college football, let's say it's not bad because I'm an Arkansas guy, so maybe we can reap the benefits. But like the bad thing for Kalen DeBoer at Alabama is if he messes around and loses a couple more games, all of Saban's guys we'll throw the peace sign and be in that transfer portal and get Smooth bought out of that sucker, and he'll be reeling. That's the reality of college football now. So the Crimson Tide, Kalen DeBoer, they got to get that thing together now.
Yeah, he was on the verge of that. Like you know, their hearts had to be in their throats when they
he was on the verge of it Saturday, huh?
Yes, when they got that onside kick. How about it, boy? How about the onside kicks, boy? Did you see that one against Oregon? Did you see the Oregon one?
Uh-uh.
I ain't never seen that one, Tyler. My man just said, like, what are we going to do? You know how they do they lay the ball on the ground and kick it, try to get all the bounces?
Mm-hmm.
My man from Oregon said, no, I'm just going to kick this thing as hard as I possibly can right at a guy.
How to work out for him.
Hell, dude tried to play dodgeball, and I'm going to tell you, he got his ass, and that ball bounced off his hip. And it bounced all the way to all of the Oregon guys running up, and they recovered that bad boy.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton.
My man kept backing up. My man said, hell with this bouncing thing. I'm just about to. I mean, he just kicked it as hard as he could. The dude was like trying to jump out the way. Bing! Hit him off the hip. And I mean, in a game that was, what, a 2-1, 2-point game, they drove down and got a touchdown. By the way, the parent of that young man from either Oregon, Ohio State, I can't remember, the guy who spit on the guy, you ought to be kicking his ass up and down. Wherever you
spit. That ain't that worse.
Oh, boy. He spit right in. He got ejected.
It was a player, obviously?
A player. Spit on corner and receiver going at it, and he spit right on him, right in his face mask. Tried to spit right in him. He got ejected immediately out of the game in the first group. So, yeah, that dude need to get his ass kicked. Sorry about that. It gets me going, boy. I'll tell you what Shannon said. It would take 10,000 men in the U.S. Coast Guard or whatever he said to get my ass off of him. He just spit my face. What you got coming up?
Oh, it's easy, man. When the New England Patriots, when they tighten that score down, were you concerned? Were you concerned when the Patriots scored to make it 14-7, knowing that the Patriots were getting the ball coming out at half? Could have tied that ball game up. Were you concerned? Be honest now. I know in hindsight, but be honest. How concerned were you? We'll cuss and discuss next.